Speechware Document 41. Industrial Problems of the West. From an address delivered in Keokuk, Iowa, October 1, 1907. Since I have been president, I have traveled in every state of this Union, but my traveling has been almost entirely on railroads, save now and then by wagon or on horseback. Now I have the chance to try traveling by river, to go down the greatest on our rivers, the Father of Waters. A good many years ago, when I lived in the Northwest, I traveled occasionally on the Upper Missouri and its tributaries, but then we went in a flatboat and did our own rowing and paddling and pulling. Now I am to try a steamboat. I am a great believer in our railway system, and the fact that I am very firm in my belief as to the necessity of the government exercising a proper supervision and control over the railroads does not in the least interfere with the other fact that I greatly admire the large majority of the men in all positions, from the top to the bottom, who build and run them. Yet, while of course I am anxious to see these men, and therefore the corporations they represent or serve, achieve the fullest measure of legitimate prosperity, nevertheless, as this country grows, I feel that we cannot have too many highroads, and that in addition to the iron highroads of our railway system, we should also utilize the great river highways which have been given us by nature. From a variety of causes, these highways have in many parts of the country been almost abandoned. This is not healthy. Our people, and especially the representatives of the people in the National Congress, should give their most careful attention to this subject. We should be prepared to put the nation collectively back of the movement to improve them for the nation's use. Our knowledge at this time is not such as to permit me to go into details, or to say definitely just what the nation should do, but most assuredly our great navigable rivers are national assets, just as much as our great seacoast harbors. Exactly, as it is for the interest of all the country that our great harbors should be fitted to receive in safety the largest vessels of the merchant fleets of the world, so by deepening and otherwise our rivers should be fitted to bear their part, if the movement of our merchandise, and this is especially true of the Mississippi and its tributaries, which drain the immense and prosperous region which makes in very fact the heart of our nation, the basin of the Great Lakes being already united with the basin of the Mississippi, and both regions being identical in their products and interests. Waterways are peculiarly fitted for the transportation of the bulky commodities which come from the soil or under the soil, and no other part of our country is as fruitful as is this in such commodities. You and Iowa have many manufacturing centers, but you remain, and I hope you will always remain, a great agricultural state. I hope that the means of transporting your commodities to market will be steadily improved, but this will be of no use unless you keep producing the commodities, and in the long run this will largely depend upon your being able to keep on the farm a high type of citizenship. The effort must be to make farm life not only remunerative but attractive, so that the best young men and girls will feel inclined to stay on the farm and not to go to the city. Nothing is more important to this country than the perpetuation of our system of medium-sized farms worked by their owners. We do not want to see our farmers sink to the condition of the peasants of the old world, barely able to live on their small holdings, nor do we want to see their places taken by wealthy men owning enormous estates which they work purely by tenants and hired servants. At present, the ordinary farmer holds his own in the land, as against any possible representative of the landlord class of farmer, that is, of the men who would own vast estates, because the ordinary farmer unites his capital, his labor, and his brains with the making of a permanent family home, and thus can afford to hold his land at a value at which it cannot be held by the capitalist, who would have to run it by leasing it or cultivating it at arm's length with hired labor. In other words, the typical American farmer of today gets his remuneration in part in the shape of an independent home for his family, and this gives him an advantage over an absentee landlord. Now, from the standpoint of the nation, as a whole, it is preeminently desirable to keep as one of our chief American types the farmer, the farm homemaker, of the medium-sized farm. This type of farm home is one of our strongest political and social bulwarks. such as farm worked by the owner has proved by experience the best place in which to breed vigorous leaders alike for country and city. It is a matter of prime economic and civic importance to encourage this type of home-owning farmer. Therefore, we should strive in every way to aid in the education of the farmer for the farm, and should shape our school system with this end in view. And so vitally important is this that, in my opinion, the federal government should cooperate with the state governments to secure the needed change and improvement in our schools. It is significant that both from Minnesota and Georgia there have come proposals in this direction in the appearance of bills introduced into the National Congress. The Congressional Land Grant Act of 1852 accomplished much in establishing the agricultural colleges in the several states, and therefore in preparing to turn the system of educational training for the young into channels at once broader and more practicable. And what I am saying about agricultural training really applies to all industrial training. But the colleges cannot reach the masses, and it is essential that the masses should be reached. Such agricultural high schools, as those in Minnesota and Nebraska for farm boys and girls, such technical high schools, as are to be found, for instance, in both St. Louis and Washington, have by their success shown that it is entirely feasible to carry in practical fashion the fundamentals of industrial training into the realms of our secondary schools. At present, there is a gap between our primary schools in country and city and the industrial collegiate courses, which must be closed, and if necessary the nation must help the state to close it. Too often our present schools tend to put altogether too great a premium upon mere literary education, and therefore to train away from the farm and the shop. We should reverse this process. Specific training of a practical kind should be given to the boys and girls who, when men and women are to make up the backbone of this nation by working in agriculture, in the mechanical industries, in arts and trades, in short, who are to do the duty that should always come first with all of us, the duty of homemaking and homekeeping. Too narrow a literary education is, for most men and women, not a real education at all, for real education should fit people primarily for the industrial and homemaking employments in which they must employ the bulk of their activities. Our country offers unparalleled opportunities for domestic and social advancement, for social and economic leadership in the world. Our greatest national asset is to be found in the children. They need to be trained to high ideals of everyday living, and to high efficiency in their respective vocations. We cannot afford to have them trained otherwise, and the nation should help the states to achieve this end. Now, men of Iowa, I want to say just a word in a matter that concerns not the states of the Mississippi Valley itself, but the states west of them, the states of the Great Plains and the Rocky Mountains. Unfortunately, I am not able in this present trip to visit those states, or I should speak to their own people in the point to which I now intend to allude, but after all anything that affects a considerable number of Americans who live under one set of conditions, must be of moment to all other Americans, for never forget, friends, that in the long run we shall all go up or go down together. The states of the High Plains and of the mountains have a peculiar claim upon me, because for a number of years I lived and worked in them, and I have that intimate knowledge of their people that comes under such conditions. In those states there is need of a modification of the land laws that have worked so well in the well-watered fertile regions to the eastward, such as those in which you here dwell. The one object in all our land laws should always be to favor the actual settler, the actual homemaker, who comes to dwell on the land and there to bring up his children to inherit it after him. The government should part with its title to the land only to the actual homemaker, not to the profit maker, who does not care to make a home. The land should be sold outright only in quantities sufficient for decent homes, not in huge areas to be held for speculative purposes or used as ranches, where those who do the actual work are merely tenants or hired hands. No temporary prosperity of any class of men could in the slightest degree atone for failure on our part to shape the laws so that they may work for the permanent good of the homemaker. This is fundamental, gentlemen, and is simply carrying out the idea upon which I dwell in speaking to you of your own farms here in Iowa. Now in many states, where the rainfall is light, it is a simple absurdity to expect any man to live, still less to bring up a family, in 160 acres. Where we are able to introduce irrigation, the homestead can be very much less in size, can, for instance, be 40 acres, and there is nothing that Congress has done during the past 6 years more important than the enactment of the National Irrigation Law. But where irrigation is not applicable and the land can only be used for grazing, it may be that you cannot run more than one steer to 10 acres, and it is not necessary to be much of a mathematician in order to see that where such is the case, a homestead of 160 acres will not go far toward the support of a family. In consequence of this fact, homesteaders do not take up the lands in the tracts in question. They are left open for anybody to graze upon that wishes to. The result is that men who use them moderately, and not with a view to exhausting their resources, are at the mercy of those who care nothing for the future and simply intend to skin the land in the present. For instance, the small sheep farmer who has a home and who wishes that home to pass on to his children improved in value will naturally run his flock so that the land will support it, not only today, but 10 years hence. But a big absentee sheep owner, who has no home in the land at all, but simply owns huge migratory flocks of sheep, may well find it to his profit to drive them over the small sheep farmer's range and eat it all out. He can then drive his flocks on, whereas the small man cannot. Of course, to permit such a state of things is not only evil for the small man, but is destructive of the best interests of the country. Substantially the same conditions obtain, as regards cattle. The custom has therefore grown up of fencing great tracts of government land without warrant of law. The men who fenced this land were sometimes rich men, who, by fencing it, kept out actual settlers and thereby worked evil to the country. But in many cases, whether they were large men or small men, their object was not to keep out actual settlers, but to protect themselves and their own industry by preventing overgrazing of the range in the part of reckless stock owners who had no place in the permanent development of the country and who were indifferent to everything except the profits of the moment. To permit the continuance of this illegal fencing inevitably tended to very grave abuses, and the government has therefore forced the fencers to take down their fences. In doing this, we have not only obeyed and enforced the law, but we have corrected many flagrant abuses. Nevertheless, we have also caused hardship, which, though unavoidable, I was exceedingly unwilling to cause. In some way or other, we must provide for the use of the public range under conditions which shall inure primarily to the benefit of the actual settlers on or near it, and which shall prevent its being wasted. This means that in some shape or way the fencing of pasture land must be permitted under restrictions which will safeguard the rights of the actual settlers. I desire to act as the actual settlers wish to have me in this matter. I wish to find out their needs and desires, and then to try to put them into effect. But they must take trouble, must look ahead to their own ultimate and real good, must insist upon being really represented by their public men, if we are to have a good result. A little while ago I received a very manly and sensible letter from one of the prominent members of the Laramie County, Wyoming, Cattle and Horse Growers Association. My correspondent remarked incidentally in his letter, "I am a small ranchman, and have to plow and pitch hay myself," and then went on to say that the great majority of their people had complied with the governmental order, had removed their fences and sold their cattle, but that they must get some kind of a lease law which would permit them to graze their stock under proper conditions, or else it would be ruinous to them to continue in the business. The thing I have most at heart, as regards this subject, is to do whatever will be of permanent benefit to just exactly the people for whom this correspondent of mine spoke, the small ranchmen who have to plow and pitch hay themselves. All I want to do is to find out what will be to their real benefit, for that is certain to be to the benefit of the country as a whole. It may be that we can secure their interests best by permitting all homesteaders in the dry country to enclose, individually or a certain number of them together, big tracts of range for summer use, the tracts being proportioned to the number of neighboring homesteaders who wish to run their cattle upon it. It may be that parts of the range will only be valuable for companies that can lease it and put large herds on it, for the way properly to develop a region is to put it to those uses to which it is best adapted. The amount to be paid for the leasing privilege is to me a matter of comparative indifference. The government does not wish to make money out of the range, but simply to provide for the necessary supervision that will prevent its being eaten out or exhausted, that is, that will secure it undamaged as an asset for the next generation, for the children of the present homemakers. Of course we must also provide enough to pay the proper share of the county taxes. I am not wedded to any one plan, and I am willing to combine several plans, if necessary. But the present system is wrong, and I hope to see, in all the states of the Great Plains and the Rockies, the men like my correspondent of the Laramie County Cattle and Horse Growers Association, the small ranchmen who plow and pitch hay themselves, seriously take up this matter and make their representatives in Congress understand that there must be some solution, and that this solution shall be one which will secure the greatest permanent well-being to the actual settlers, the actual homemakers. I promise with all the strength I have to cooperate toward this end.